This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our radio Main Street across North Dakota. And today, of course, we are reminding people that we are in our fall membership campaign, because that's how this radio gets to you. We have members, right, Ashley Thornburg?
Yes, we do. And they help pay for everything that you hear on Prairie Public.
And today we're going to hear from the Democratic NPL candidate for governor, Shelley Lenz. And we're also going to talk with Chris Meisner, who is our Prairie Public Television program manager, about some really different ways you can watch and listen to Prairie Public. But first, we're going to remind you, as I just started saying, we're looking for members, and we're looking for members because we need members. It's easy to become one. Just go online to prairiepublic.org, click on donate, and moments later, you've done that good deed that keeps us on the air. Or call us at 800-359-4145. Again, it doesn't take but a couple of moments, and you have that warm feeling of being a Prairie Public member.
Yeah. And during a show like Main Street, we are illuminating the human condition, whether it's just allowing time for people to speak without having to rush them through. But of course, we also have poetry. We have a lot of arts programming. We know that you appreciate learning about things, and that's why we like to dig deep into our interviews and find those little nuggets that just make it a little extra special to listen to. And that is what you are supporting when you invest in Main Street with a contribution at prairiepublic.org, or when you call 800-359-4145. Tuning in during Main Street during a global pandemic to get all of the local angles. Well, now we're asking that you show your appreciation for hearing from health experts and school officials that you have learned from and hopefully found this information useful. Give us a call, 800-359-4145 or prairiepublic.org.
We cover a very wide area, all of the state of North Dakota, a bit of South Dakota, a bit of Montana, a big chunk of northwest Minnesota. That takes a lot of equipment, transmitters every so many miles, because, of course, we're a broadcast signal as we stream live at the same time. Lots of different ways you can listen to us, but it's all technology that requires money as well. So you're supporting this system that brings you the signal you're listening to right now, the show we hope you enjoy, Main Street, locally produced for this region. And, of course, it's made possible by people who listen and say, you know what? I should invest in this because I am listening to it. I listen to it almost every day. And sometimes I learn something that was really intriguing, and I talk to other people about it. And I heard it on Prairie Public, on Main Street, which is broadcast weekdays from 3 to 4 and Sunday morning at 10 Central. It's there because I invested in it. You know, it takes a village, and we're talking to the village right now. Give us a call at 800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org.
It really is that simple. 1-800-359-4145 or online at prairiepublic.org. It just takes a second, but it makes a big difference.
Joining us now on Main Street is Dr. Shelley Lenz. She is the Democratic NPL candidate for North Dakota governor. Dr. Lenz, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Doug.
Why did you decide to run?
Why did I decide to run? Because I wanted to serve North Dakota. And I know that sounds silly, but I voted for Doug Burgum in 2000. When was that? 16, I guess. And yeah, and like many fellow North Dakotans, we were hoping for change, especially out here in western North Dakota, our smaller towns, and Burgum's just not getting the job done. And so I decided I wanted to bring the voice of western North Dakota, the history of North Dakota, our economies of North Dakota, how our practical problem-solving solutions up to North Dakota government.
What are the changes you wanted to see out in your part of the state?
Well, I would like to see. Well, and it's not. And as I've been visiting with North Dakotans all across the state, I realize it's not just the problem out in Western North Dakota. It's in Fargo. It's in Bismarck. It's in Dodge. It's in Halliday and Minot. Everywhere in between. And the change that we're looking to see is to bring some homegrown prosperity back to North Dakota, actually lifting our nonpartisan league roots, where North Dakota government used to invest in North Dakotans and North Dakota to protect us and defend us from outside forces, whether it's big government, big business, droughts, floods, viruses, all those are outside forces that, being a rural state with less than 800,000 people, the nonpartisan league recognize that the power of North Dakota government is a good way to really invest so that we can defend ourselves from those outside forces. And so homegrown prosperity is investing in North Dakota to help us be more financially independent in our own lives, in our own towns, and as a state. And so an example of homegrown prosperity, a big one would be like food security. That's really, really important for any thriving community. So you can imagine how a public-private partnership of about $50 million into a regional meat processing facility would open up tons of new direct revenue to the ranchers. It would offer more local food economy and options for local restaurants and the local food movement. It would bring a value added into not only country of label or country of origin labeling, but what about North Dakota origin labeling of our one of our most precious resources, which is the animal ag industry. And animal ag and plant ag go hand in hand. So you can see all the spinoffs from that. You can bring in higher ed with the meat sciences, jobs, all that. So that's an example of homegrown prosperity. We are also out here in Western North Dakota. We see all of our revenue just being burned up into the atmosphere with the flaring that has not been captured. Another example of homegrown prosperity would be a public-private partnership into capturing that flare and bringing it to our gas plants. So the gas plants could expand. We'd have more clean energy, more cleaner atmosphere, more revenue for North Dakota, more stable jobs as we evolve our energy and ag industry into the future. And we strongly feel that I am a veterinarian and also a small business owner and a scientist. And my lieutenant governor is Ben Vig, a fifth generation farmer. And the way we are used to and trained to solve complex problems with a long vision. And that's what we're going to do. That's homegrown prosperity.
Well, let's take that first one, that example you offered, a meatpacking operation that would be located in North Dakota. What are the obstacles to that?
So the obstacles is one, getting somebody elected into the governors that understand that as a priority. So that's the first obstacle, but I'm hoping that we're going to know that in November 3rd. The second obstacle, I think when I visited with Mark Watney with the Farmers Union, I mean, we've been trying to do this for a long time in North Dakota. So the first obstacle is the initial capital investment of $50 million. And I propose that be the North Dakota government, whether that comes from the Legacy Fund or, Bank of North Dakota or something. So that's one of the biggest obstacles. That's the investment from the government. We're not real big on big government here in North Dakota. So what is the best business model to continue to run the operation? A co-op model. That is the best kind of business model. So that's the public-private partnership. So getting the co-op organized, and of course we have some of the best co-op organizing and legal information here in North Dakota. Those would be the top two things that have prevented it in the past. The then what we would need, you can have your niche market, which is about 30% of, you know, each carcass weight or whatever is the nice cuts, but the 70% needs to be more of an institutional contract. And so that institutional contracts would come from whether it's here it's our schools or other things within the state for some of that 70% to make it run. So that is, again, that public-private partnership aspect to it. So, and this would be unique in the union. There's not a single state that's in the position like North Dakota is to make this happen. One, because it's a major industry of ours. Two, we have our nonpartisan league, practical North Dakotan approach. And three, we have the will.
You mentioned your nonpartisan league roots, and you go back a long time. It's over 100 years ago in many cases. That goes back to the establishment of the state mill and elevator, the state bank. They kind of came out of that political movement. So are you looking at more state investment in sort of state enterprises?
100%, yeah. But it's not going to be... It's not really, first of all, I'm a great granddaughter of the original Nonpartisan League. We actually, our family brand, the CV, is one of the oldest in the states. I think it was 1893 we got it. But so it is about, but it's not really state owned. It's more of a public-private partnership. So the state invests in it, in that infrastructure. And then most of the second part of the public part, it's run by a North Dakota co-op, and then the North Dakota co-op can decide the rules of how the business runs, and so that will help with kind of our smaller government, but help with our legacy, which is what the NPL, the state bank, the state mill, the state elevator, all of that. Those are legacies, and so that's what we're looking to do.
You mentioned you voted for Governor Doug Burgum in 2016 when he first ran. What are your specific issues with him now that you're confronting him in the ballot box?
So, from back in when I started, it was he doesn't seem to be understanding about the stability that we need within our communities, the economic stability in our communities. And so he was governor during when times were good, or I would say he wasn't making hay when the sun shone. And our communities are struggling, even though he had all the resources and powers, and he was supposed to be this new business leader. And he just seems like he doesn't understand the economy and the culture of our communities and the industries and how the industries affect our communities. So I've lived through boom and bust out here in Western North Dakota, and it's really hard. It's really hard. And there's a lot more innovative and more kind of culturally and kind of business specific North Dakota that he just doesn't seem to get. And so that's why I ran originally, because I voted for him because he was a businessman and I'm a businesswoman and I know how important that is for any community or any state. So that's why I ran originally. When COVID hit, his lack of leadership and not understanding how to solve complex problems became very apparent. At first, I mean, I can't blame him for not being a scientist and a veterinarian like I am, and I deeply understand viral outbreaks and economic impacts of a viral impact in the animal world and in the human world. So at first I thought, well, maybe he just doesn't know. But then as it comes out, it's like he doesn't know how to lead. He doesn't even understand that we are in a crisis, and what a crisis needs is a strategy, not, I don't know what he's doing. And he actually made it political. And that makes me very sad, because I wanted to believe in my leaders, you know, and I'm willing to forgive a mistake. I am not willing to let a leader cause harm. That's when my mama bear comes out. And so I will be actually on Thursday releasing the LensVig COVID-19 crisis management plan to show North Dakotans that it is possible to build a strategy that's not political, that involves our history, our culture, our economies, and putting the power back into our local communities to make, and the resources back into our local communities so they can, together, we can move out of this and see a light at the end of the tunnel instead of the fatigue that's happening in the divisiveness. So, he's just not a leader. He's just a CEO. And I think now, and I also realize the difference between the CEO selling a product, marketing a product, versus a successful small businesswoman who sells a service, a local service. I put close to $1 million in payroll alone into the Dickinson-Kildare area. And everybody knows that those direct dollars have a multiplying effect of 1.8. So it's almost $2 million. That's homegrown prosperity. Direct dollars in our hands, in the North Dakotans' hands, is what leads us to homegrown prosperity.
Well, let's get to this thing that's coming out on Thursday. Give us a preview of a couple of things here. First of all, what will it say about masks? What will it say about green and yellow and those kinds of things?
Yeah, well, it'll show that it's not a strategy. It's not, you know, playing whack-a-mole with these individual things that are all part of a very complex problem solving. And so it's not masks or no masks. It's what is the strategy to make it so that we can move forward so we're not such a national, we're not in the national news all the time about that we're in distress. And so that's what I hope that people will understand, the difference between a strategy and whatever's happening right now, lack of leadership, not having a strategy, not having a plan, governing versus doing nothing. And so I hope that's what will be very clear with that.
The apparent strategy that the governor currently has seems to be to defer to local or more regional units of government, if you will, be to sort of look at how the outbreak is dealt with in that specific area. School districts, for example, have a fair amount of autonomy in this. How would you differ in that regard?
Yeah, it's actually working with them and providing them the accurate information and resources so that they can best govern their own local community. It's we're interconnected. It's not either or. So you can't demand one thing and not give the local communities accurate information, access to data, transparency, and resources. You can't demand this and not give them the resources, whether it's increased salaries for teachers, increased infrastructure, all those things. It would be like, look, we have an enemy that has invaded our nation, and that enemy is invisible. It's a virus. And our nation did not come up with a command and control or command strategy, an incident command strategy, like you do in every crisis. They didn't do that. You know, the federal government passed it on to the states. So we wouldn't do that if we were invaded by an enemy that were made of people. It's just that this enemy is invisible. So now it's down to the states. So it's every state for itself, which is not good. But we can see now, though, we can see which governors could lead and which ones just didn't know what to do. And so they just wrapped themselves around the White House using that same strategy. You would not ask your local city mayor to defend against, you know, an invasion from, let's say, Chinese people or something, like a foreign threat. You would not ask your city mayor or your local school board or your superintendent to defend that for themselves against a foreign invader. Well, we have a foreign invader, and that's a virus. And it's been, it's sad. It's sad, and it hurts me, and it hurts, I see what it's doing to my community. And by him throwing all the responsibility to the individual and into the school boards and to the local governments and the businesses. As a small businesswoman, it's caused so much discord and confusion and anxiety. I it's like he doesn't even understand how our communities work. We have to rely on each other.
Shelley Lenz is the Democratic NPL candidate for North Dakota governor. And Shelley, there has not been a Democratic governor since George Sinner. That's 28 years ago. Why has the DNPL had such a difficult challenge with North Dakota voters?
That I don't know. I am actually an independent, and I think it could be that maybe we need leadership, and I hope that I'm going to lead the party to where we need to be, get the power back to the people. I really think we need to lift up our nonpartisan league roots. We have to remember, we're not the National Dem Party. We are the Democratic Nonpartisan League. That nonpartisan league part is precious to us. It speaks to every North Dakotan. It's not anti-Republican. It's not, it brings in the independents. It is pro-North Dakota. So my vision for my platform and how I'd like to lead is to really pull up those nonpartisan league roots and recreate what North Dakota stands for. We don't stand for the National Republican Party or the Democrat North Dakota Party. We are the Dem MPL, and that's what we need to remind everybody about. And we have to have actions and philosophies that reflect that. We are not anti-Republican. We're very inclusive. We are practical problem solvers, where we use our money and our votes and our energy to invest in North Dakota to defend us from big government, big business, viruses, floods, all of the above. That's what I think we're missing.
How are you getting in front of voters?
So you can imagine this is a very grassroots campaign. And so traveling around the state in a COVID safe manner. I have my truck that's very visible. Of course, social media, events, meet and greets, like private meet and greets where people can ask me some questions or things like that. And then we just started our media campaign, so you'll see some commercials coming out. Listening sessions have been really good. So this is kind of what's confusing, like getting in front of voters. Probably my favorite thing has been doing these listening sessions. It's actually asking the voters to speak, and I listen to them. And that's not only helped me get in front of voters, but it's also helped me shape what's important and how to fix, how to problem solve. What exactly are the problems? So I don't know what you call the listening sessions, because I don't know if that's campaigning or actually more policy developing or problem solving. So it's been so energizing. I can't even tell you. I tell everybody I'm running for governor every year, because it is my it's from all across the state. And I understood the problems out here in Western North Dakota, and realizing that everybody's sharing the same problem, different ways and different understandings, and the amount of infrastructure that's there already locally, and people are working so hard. We just need to start pulling in the same direction with some priorities of investing back into the people and in North Dakota to make sure the power stays within the people.
Shelley Lenz is Democratic NPL candidate for North Dakota governor. Thanks for joining us today.
I really enjoyed this. It's a blast.
Coming up on Main Street, Prairie Public Television Programming Manager Chris Meisner will join us to talk about streaming our programming, live streaming it. First, the news.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. University of North Dakota President Andrew Armacost made a pitch for UND's capital construction request to the legislature's Interim Higher Education Committee. Armacost told the committee it's part of UND's master plan to reduce its square footage.
What we found was we have plenty of space, but the quality of the space is poor. And so what we're doing is improving those environments to provide a positive impact on the overall mission of UND. But in some, trying to reduce the total square footage, modernizing and reducing all at the same time.
UND's ask for the 2021 legislature involves renovations to Merrifield Hall and to Twomley Hall. The project price tag is $79 million, with $56 million coming from the state and $23 million from private fundraising.
This will be improved space utilization. There'll be a demolition of other spaces, not Merrifield, but Gamble Hall. And so the net reduction is a third of a million square foot of space being taken off of our campus. So it reduces deferred maintenance or eliminates reduced maintenance by a significant amount, well over $100 million.
Two Minnesota Republican lawmakers are criticizing DFL Governor Tim Walz over his administration's enforcement of COVID-19 restrictions. Representatives Dave Baker of Wilmar and Tony Juergens of Cottage Grove say state inspectors are levying stiff fines against restaurants and other hospitality businesses. They highlighted a Hastings restaurant that is fighting $7,600 in fines, largely tied to employees' use of masks. Jorgen says the stepped-up enforcement appears to be a change in the administration's approach.
When many of these executive orders were issued, the governor indicated that the purpose was to educate, not punish. And I believe I even remember somebody saying to hand out masks, not fines. But unfortunately, that's not the reality.
Baker, a former restaurant owner, called on Governor Walz to ease up on fines and urge Walz to allow more indoor seating in restaurants before cold weather sets in. And North Dakota's Aeronautics Commission director says airline passenger numbers continue to recover from the virtual shutdown of air travel earlier this year. Kyle Warner says in August, 43,559 passengers boarded airplanes. Warner says that's a 43% retention rate of the passengers compared with August of 2019. And he says North Dakota's retention remains above the national average. Warner says there is pent-up demand for air travel.
And the more people that I've spoken to that have traveled on airlines, they felt, you know, that it worked. I mean, that they were able to social distance at the airports best possible and wear masks where appropriate. And, you know, on the airlines are doing the best they can to accommodate people. And so for the most part, I felt, you know, as people have flown, they're more willing to fly again.
Warner says some airlines are also adding back flights. And he says American Airlines recently added flights from Bismarck to Phoenix. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton with Ashley Thornburg, and it's time to remind our listeners that they can be more than listeners. They could be members, and it's the duty of us during our fall membership drive to remind people out there who are listening to Main Street that members keep us on the air. Right, Ashley?
Absolutely. The largest single slice of the revenue pie comes from our members. And those are people who are listeners, who are particularly engaged and passionate listeners, who have said that they will contribute financially to the health of this organization. And of course, when you call in during Main Street, you're letting us know that long form interviews are of particular interest to you. A candidate who has 20 minutes to talk about what they would do if elected or reelected, or getting to hear the how, the why, the what of an author interview, interviews that have time to breathe. You're supporting that when you call 800-359-4145 or when you click and join at prairiepublic.org.
And if you're listening, of course, you're consuming the product, and we deeply appreciate that, especially since, you know, we have a sort of a sense of mission, if you will, at Prairie Public. Public is important. We are interested in what our listeners think about what we're doing. And if you call in with a pledge, we would welcome your comments. As a matter of fact, we welcome your comments regardless if you're pledging support for this station, because we learn from our listeners. It's easy to do. It's going online and simply going to prairiepublic.org, click on donate, and moments later, you're done, and you feel better, and we have a little more to go on, if you will. Or pick up the phone and call us toll-free at 1-800-359-4145. Again, it doesn't take much time. It's deeply appreciated, and it puts the public, that's you, into this operation. You're helping produce Main Street, and we deeply appreciate that.
Yeah, we should start listing you all as producer credits, although that might take a big chunk of our show. Main Street, of course, is a show that you are tuning to for local and regional reflection on the news, as much as the national news. And you have tuned to Main Street during this pandemic to see how North Dakota schools are handling this situation, or the unemployment office, or how therapists are taking their sessions on to Zoom. Whatever your reason for listening to Main Street, we thank you for it. We put a lot of effort into this show, and we're grateful for anybody who contributes right now. And the process, we try to make it as easy as possible. You can go online to prairiepublic.org, or you can pick up that phone and call 1-800-359-4145 in support and appreciation of local in-depth news programming coverage that reflects who we are in this region.
Of course, the big story around the world and locally has been the pandemic. COVID-19 has really disrupted life as normal. The new normal has become this overused cliche. And part of that new normal has been that people have less to live on, that they're means of income has been deeply affected, and that's affected some of our membership, because obviously priorities are food, shelter, transportation sometimes, and then public radio. We understand that, and that's why sometimes we go out and we ask the village to pay it forward. Some people don't have the wherewithal this time around for the fall membership drive. Maybe others of you do, and we would deeply appreciate you digging a little deeper, perhaps giving us a larger donation to keep this operation running. Or for those of you who have not yet become members, this would be a splendid time to do that. And again, it's quick and easy to do. Just give us a call at 1-800-359-4145 or go online to prairiepublic.org. For those of you who have done that, thank you very much. Now we're going to turn to Chris Meisner. He's the Prairie Public Television Program Manager, to talk about something that's brand new on that part of our service. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. We have now available on the Prairie Public website and in a few other places live streaming of the Prairie Public TV broadcast signal for our primary channel.
Whoa, that's big.
It is pretty big. And what it means is that you can now live stream online the exact same broadcast signal that you're getting on your television set at home over either an antenna or if you have cable.
So this is exactly what we've been doing with radio, right? Radio has been live streaming now for some time, but now the television.
Yeah, it's actually very similar to that. So the same thing that you see when you tune into your TV to Prairie Public, you can now see online. And there's a couple of ways you can do it so far, with more ways, hopefully, and expected to be on the way in the near future.
You know, we in 2020 have just sort of come to expect on-demand programming, but I'm sure that this is still quite a process even in 2020. What did it take to allow this to happen?
Well, PBS has really been leading an initiative or mounting an initiative in the past year or so for what's called local live streaming. And it's all mostly done centrally at PBS. Here at Prairie Public, what we have done is just tap into a resource that has been made available to us from PBS. The rights for TV programs have been going over a transformation over the past year for getting the permission from program producers to be able to air things in this way. And we've been We have been locally at Prairie Public looking into different options for this, even before we found out about the current opportunity that PBS has offered for live streaming local channels.
Well, a lot of the programming is produced in the U.S., some of it in Canada, some in Great Britain, and across the globe. I imagine that those rights get a little bit difficult because you have to figure out international law. And I know this was more a national PBS effort, but do you know about that end of it?
A little bit. I mean, every single program that airs has different rights. Yeah, PBS kind of led that, but we have had sort of a separate issue. Of course, Prairie Public is a big part of our audience for television, is in Canada, Winnipeg area mainly, but throughout Manitoba. And they had not been, until recently, able to stream our on-demand programs from PBS.
Chris, we have more than one television stream. We have multiple streams, including the Minnesota Channel and other channels, the World Channel. Are all of these streaming? Are all of them available on demand or as live? Or
no, just our primary channel, which is our main, you know, channel, is available in this way at the moment. I think Minnesota Channel might be able to live stream Minnesota Channel through the TPT website. Of course, Minnesota Channel comes out of TPT, Twin Cities. PBS in the Twin Cities, and I do know that the PBS Kids sub-channel that we have, you can stream by just going to pbskids.org and then clicking on live TV there.
Well, this would have been particularly useful in Minot. We've had all these disruptions caused by work on our transmission tower there. There's still occasionally some outages, so this is perhaps particularly relevant for people who have had the broadcast signal disrupted.
Yeah, it would be because, you know, this is available on the internet, you know, online. And the main place that you can access this live stream right now is by going to video.prairiepublic.org, which is our Prairie Public video page on our website. And when you get there, you'll see a button in the upper right corner that says Live TV. And if you click on that Live TV button, that will take you to the live stream page where you can activate it and watch it just as if you were watching on your television.
How much did this cost?
As far as I know, it is just a service that PBS is offering to the stations now as part of being a PBS member station.
So will a Prairie Public member who winters in Arizona be able to watch that primary channel from Prairie Public?
No, the service is geofenced, meaning that you do have to live in the region where you would be able to pick up Prairie Public over the air to be able to live stream it in this way.
Sorry, snowbirds.
yeah. And that's just, it has to do with the rights, I think, that we were talking about in terms of only being able to make it available to people that would normally be able to get Prairie Public over the air.
Okay.
So this is another addition. This is now programming with our broadcast on our primary television channel. It's live on the internet. So that's one particular aspect that we're talking about here. And of course, we've had for a long time on demand by going up to our website. You can access programs that have already aired and play them via internet.
Yeah, that's right. And all of the Prairie Public programs that are available on demand are available to anybody anywhere. Whether someone wants to access them through our YouTube page, we actually post some programs now on Facebook. And then on the PBS video page and Passport, which is the membership option for that, anybody anywhere can access Prairie Public programs like Prairie Pulse and Prairie Mosaic, Prairie Musicians, and our documentaries. All of those are available on at video.prairiepublic.org as well.
Well, and some of those shows you just mentioned and many more are premiering for the upcoming season. We have Prairie Pulse that's premiering in early October. Prairie Mosaic, you mentioned, premiering in late October. What are you very excited about premiering?
Well, I'm not so much excited as interested to see the new season of Prairie Pulse because viewers who watched Prairie Pulse over the last half of this past season saw John Harris interviewing people via Zoom calls, basically, you know, in that format because of the pandemic. And now for the new season that starts at the beginning of October, they're going to have the guests back in the studio again, but they're going to have, as many shows have now, a set, a new set, a different set that is allowing for social distancing between host John Harris and the guest that he's interviewing.
We're actually doing some tapings for that today, and I walked in and I saw Madeline wearing a mask and had a thermometer ready to take people's temperatures as they come in. We also, in addition to fun shows coming up like Last Tango in Halifax, and we have Masterpiece, we have a lot of really important programs that are going to be coming up. You might be aware it is an election year.
Yes, I'm aware of that, and I'll bet you every single person listening is as well.
What are the details on our upcoming election coverage?
Well, there's, of course, two components to it, one of which is the national PBS programs and then our local ones. National PBS programs, PBS NewsHour, of course, is the program that sort of has all that coverage. The three presidential debates and the vice presidential debate will be covered in special reports and special broadcasts by PBS NewsHour, as will election night coverage on election night. And then, of course, just every single day, Monday through Friday, on PBS NewsHour, there's going to be plenty of coverage of the election as well. And then locally, we have four debates, which I think is about the same as we've had in past years, maybe a little fewer than we've had in past years. But we'll be doing debates locally with the North Dakota congressional race, the Minnesota 7th District congressional race, the Department of Public Instruction in North Dakota, as well as the North Dakota governor's race.
Well, let's move on to PBS. You know, in seasons past, Downton Abbey has been premiering a new season or whatever. What's the big thing from PBS this fall?
Well, I don't know that there's a single program that is sort of the flagship one necessarily this fall. Certainly nothing on the magnitude of a Downton Abbey, but Ashley already mentioned Last Tango in Halifax, which is coming back with a new season. That's starting this coming Sunday on September 20th. This past Sunday, on the 13th, and continuing for a couple more weeks, is a new program called Vandervalk, which stars Mark Warren and is a remake of a series that was on in the 70s and 80s where Mark Warren plays the detective Vandervalk in Amsterdam. Mm. And then we have another new program called Flesh and Blood, which stars Imelda Staunton, Francesca Annis, and Stephen Ray. And Stephen Ray and Francesca Annis play an older couple who are just meeting each other and having a relationship, and there's some sort of mystery to solve involved with their connected to their relationship. And then we have another a new comedy drama called The Trouble with Maggie Cole, which stars Don French, who is a legend in British
the
comedy.
The Vicar, right?
Vicar of Dibley, that's right.
He's great.
Vicar of Dibley, French and Saunders, many listeners and viewers.
I'm going to watch just because you said her name.
Yeah, well, that's about all you'd need, right? And so this program, Trouble with Maggie Cole, she plays the title character, Maggie Cole, And she's described as a busybody and a local historian in the coastal village of Thurlbury. And looks like it's sort of a little bit like Doc Martin in the sense that, you know, the supporting cast of characters is, you know, all of the different residents of this village, you know, who interact with her. And we know whenever Don French is involved, there's going to be hijinks of some kind. Yes, shenanigans, exactly.
Well, I'm a big Doc Martin fan, so I look forward to the quirkiness of this new show. Chris Meisner is the Prairie Public Television Program Manager. And again, a reminder that if you want to live stream Prairie Public's primary channel, just go to video.prairiepublic.org. Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dakota Datebook is next.
The coronavirus has turned the workplace upside down, and more companies are now using freelancers.
Now, you know, these companies are starting to see, like, hey, having these folks at home is saving me money. Hey, I don't see those people, so do I really need to be giving them benefits?
I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. How contract workers are navigating the recession this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered begins at 4 Central, 3 Mountain. This is Dakota Datebook for September 15th. On this date in 1954, the Bismarck Tribune announced that abbots and bishops from across the United States and Canada were arriving in Richerton to attend the blessing and installation of Father Ignatius Hunkler as abbot of Assumption Abbey. Catholic dignitaries arrived from as far away as Pennsylvania, Saskatchewan, Washington, and Alabama. Father Hunkler was not only the first North Dakota native to become the abbot of Assumption Abbey, but the youngest abbot in the United States at the age of 35. Assumption Abbey was founded in 1899 in Richerton by the Swiss monk Vincent Wehrli. Originally a monastery, the community officially became an abbey in 1903, and Father Wehrli was named its first abbot. Father Hunkler was born in 1919 in Napoleon. His parents were ranchers, and he was one of 9 children. The family wasn't originally Catholic. However, a local school teacher boarding with the family inspired one of the children to convert. Eventually, the entire family became Catholic in 1922. Hunkler graduated from the Assumption Abbey Prep School in 1938 and became a priest in 1946. He taught at the Abbey Seminary before being elected to abbot. Father Hunkler valued education highly. He established Assumption College, a 2-year liberal arts school open to women and men of all faiths. He oversaw the building of a new high school and a college dorm and a student union. Unfortunately, the seminary, high school, and college would eventually close. Father Hunkler's largest legacy is in Bogota, Colombia. In 1960, the Archbishop of Bogota invited Hunkler to found a boys' school in the city. Hunkler accepted and sent 4 monks to Puerto Rico to learn Spanish. In 1961, the monks opened Colegio San Carlos in Bogota. This all-boys school is considered one of the best in Colombia. A priory was also founded, and Assumption Abbey still has a strong connection to the priory and school. Father Hunkler resigned from the abbey in 1966 and worked as a hospital chaplain in Boston and Los Angeles. He died in California in 1987 and is buried at Assumption Abbey. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Trista Razor-Storsa. I'm Bill Thomas.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Listen to NPR News at work, even if you're working in your slippers. Ask your smart speaker to play NPR and stay connected at home.
You've got not one, but 2 streams of Prairie Public to choose from on your smart speaker. Just ask it and listen.
Just a couple of minutes left in today's Main Street to remind you that this is our fall membership drive. Ashley Thornburg and I have been, you know, mentioning every now and then during the last hour that you are the magic sauce that makes this stew possible. So give us a call, 800-359-4145, or go online to prairiepublic.org.
And you might be asking yourself, why is a radio station asking for money? And if you are a little bit new here, maybe it hasn't quite sunken in that we're not airing commercials and therefore we're not raising money by selling that time to advertisers, airing lots and lots of commercials. We are a non-commercial public radio station, and the most efficient, direct, and frankly substantial source of funding here is to come directly to you, the listener, and ask you to become a member. 1-800-359-4145 or click and join at prairiepublic.org.
Listener funding makes up the bulk of our budget. That is the biggest slice of the pie. That's why we do this throughout the year. That listener support, those people who become members, are very important to this operation. It's not just for the significant slice of pie that you represent to the budget pie as a whole. Mm-hmm. It's because if we're looking for grants, we've got these members who believe in us, and that is a pretty much a good leverage, if you will, with people who grant money for programming, that the kind of programming we do. So this is your opportunity to sort of vote for the show you're listening to right now, Main Street, the service that you use all the time, Prairie Public, and for enhancing its opportunities to get more programming that you might want to listen to improve the programming service that we provide. You make it possible. You are the public in Prairie Public. Give us a call, 800-359-4145, or go online to prairiepublic.org. You are very important.
And if you have the means and really want to pay public radio forward so that many people have access to fact-based news and information, especially important in an election year, consider that this programming is here because of the people who came before you. And again, if you have the means to do a little bit more than that $10 or $15 a month, we invite you to join our investor circle level. That is a commitment of $100 a month or more, really making a profound impact by helping Prairie Public pay for the programming, the staffing, the equipment that it takes to cover such a large geographic region in a time of unprecedented information changing. It's an incredibly complicated thing that we do here at Prairie Public, and you make it all possible when you call 1-800-359-4145 or when you click and join at prairiepublic.org.
Wednesday on Prairie Public's Main Street that you're listening to right now, a new program starts this weekend. It's Live Wire Radio, a variety show including comedy, guest interviews, musical performances, etc. It revels in the quirky local character of Portland, Oregon, where it originates, and we'll talk with the host, Luke Burbank, on our show. And as part of our membership drive, we'll feature a few of our regular features. Tom Eason with a Plains Folk essay, Chuck Lura with Natural North Dakota, poetry from Studio 47, and Harvest Public Media will have a story about Midwest hops. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Wednesday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.